When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Okay, motherfucker!
What are you looking at, sir?
I'm looking at you, miss.
Run that, baby.
I'm not the Zodiac. And if I was, I certainly wouldn't tell you.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Imprint Companion. This is a podcast that unpacks, unsheaths, and digs into all of the incredible, resplendent glory that is the Imprint Films boutique Blu-ray label here in Australia, and available all around the world. It's not region locked. Today, I'm doing a very special episode of one specific disc in the collection, number 251, the sensational, gorgeous and absolutely stuffed Sam Peckinpah, Bring Me the Head of Alfredo Garcia. And no, you are not going to hear the dulcet tones of the Greek prince of Australian film criticism, one Alexi Toliopoulos, talking to me today as we unpack this bad boy. You instead are going to hear the voice of someone very familiar to everyone on One Heat Minute Productions. I think one of the greatest long-form film critics maybe ever. His essays on films like Inherent Vice and Blowout and Once Upon a Time in Hollywood are all-timers. And he has actually contributed to an amazing video essay titled Portrait of an Artist as a Dead Man, Bring Me the Head of Alfredo Garcia and Sam Peckinpah's Last Chance. He is my dear friend, a Peckinpah acolyte, a Warren Oates fanboy, the legend, the man, the myth. It's Travis Woods. Hello, my friend.
Oh, Blakey, Blakey, Blake, Blake, Blake. I like how through some strange osmosis, my powers of hyperbole have infected you, and your introductions of me get longer and longer and longer, which I'll take, you know, my delicate ego. We'll just heartily eat right up. I was also, while listening to that, I couldn't help but be a little tickled how, you know, you very kindly noted me as a strong, long-form film critic. I like how even my titles are getting longer and longer and longer now. Portrait of the Artist as a Dead Man, Bring Me the Head of Alfredo Garcia and Sam Peckinpah's Last Chance. Like, I couldn't have just kept that like a tight 5 or 6 words. No, I had to give a paragraph as a title.
No. I appreciate the paragraph as title. We love that. So firstly, this disc, so Bring Me the Head of Alfredo Garcia, for anyone, we're going to talk through. Travis is a real expert on this film and really everything in it. And I before we get to his video, I just want to sort of shout out, this is truly, when you look at just the single features on one disc, is one of the most stuffed Imprint releases, which is saying something, that I have ever seen. New audio commentary by Mike Siegel, who has done basically everything and been such a huge part of everything that has been brought to Imprint Films, which is amazing. We've got Gordon Dawson and Nick Redman doing an audio commentary. Peckinpah scholars Paul Sadore, Garner Simons, David Weddle, and Nick Redman doing another one. You've got Paul Cedar and assistant director Caddy Haber, moderated by the Twilight Time producer Nick Redman, on here as well. We've got an isolated score track. You've got Passion and Poetry, Sam's favorite film, which is the making of with all the key cast and crew, new feature gallery, new stuff from Travis, and an entire second disc, Passion and Poetry, The Ballad of Sam Peckinpah. It's unbelievable. And then you get to this incredible video essay by my friend who I'm talking today, who does a lengthy 30-minute video essay, which may be one of the best that Imprint have ever put together. And it is all because Travis so thoughtfully constructs everything that he has to say about this movie. And it's so powerful. And I learned so much. And it was just incredible. So if you are a fan of Peckinpah and you don't own this particular edition, you are doing yourself and your collection a disservice. So thank you, man, for doing it. Thank you for talking to me about it. And I just want to start really quickly and ask, like, how long ago was it? What are your earliest memories of Alfredo Garcia? Because this movie, I mean, I think your essay says it so beautifully, but this movie clearly means a lot to you. And it has such an amazing confluence of themes of, you know, the director being the sort of most nakedly personal, as well as the most sort of interrogating to kind of genres that he formed, as well as like this portrait of masculinity, because ultimately Peckinpah, being a Michael Mann guy myself, like Peckinpah's influence on interrogations of masculinity is boundless, and has tendrils through a whole generation of filmmakers. But tell me why this movie, what it was your experience of first seeing it, and why it has continued to grow in your estimations as, you know, one of those truly monumental pieces of art in his already pretty monumental resume.
Well, Jesus, in true Travis fashion, I'm going to take the long way around. And by the way, I like what you said. Paragraph has title. I'm going to use that as my autobiography. Paragraph has title. Travis Wood story. First, I'm going to swing back around, do a little housekeeping, and just say, while I'm very happy to be talking to you about this film, I'm happy to talk to anybody about this film. Credit where due to the great Peckinpah scholar Mike Siegel, whose, you know, fingerprints really are all over this incredibly overstuffed, as you said, box set that is a tribute to this film. I can't imagine that there will ever be another, unless this just gets upgraded to 4K with the same features. I can't imagine a home video release of this film that is going to be as loaded as this one is. It's incredible. And as you said, you know, there are pre-existing commentaries which are helmed by the late and the great Twilight Time producer Nick Redman, with all sorts of Peckinpah scholars and biographers. And as you said, there is a new one with Mike Siegel, and I just want to point out the importance of that is that Mike Siegel is also, he's the filmmaker behind this. Any real Peckinpah head, they know of this documentary, this feature-length documentary called Passion and Poetry, The Ballad of Sam Peckinpah. Mike Siegel is the one who made that movie years back, and this is the first time it has been released on Blu-ray ever as a second disc to this, which is another reason why this box set is so important. And I think it's very right and true that it is Bring Me the Head of Alfredo Garcia that is the home video release that is so packed with all of this biographical information about Peckinpah, because it is his most autobiographical film. And as for where it found me or where I found it, you know, I was, my old man is a fan of Westerns, and he's also a fan of Sam Peckinpah. I still remember to this day when I was around 12 years old, it was a Saturday, and he sat me down. He's like, I'm going to sit your ass down. And he's like, it's time. And I'm like, oh shit, we're gonna have like the awkward birds and bees talk. And no, what he meant by it's time is we're gonna watch the fucking Wild Bunch.
Yeah.
And you're gonna sit down, you're gonna watch that, and I'm gonna shotgun this thing right into your retinas. And he did, and I loved it. And you know, even though my little baby brain was unable to absorb the totality of the film, I was aware that it was something special and it was something unique. And even though by that point it was, you know, a couple decades old, I was still seeing things that I'd never seen before in cinema. But I mean, what the hell, I was 12. But also that lit something in my brain. And, you know, that was, everyone talks about that time, the first time they're watching a movie and they realize, oh, somebody made this. This has an authorial, no pun intended, imprint upon it. There are thumbprints on this thing. There are whirlpools of fingerprints that are different from any other movie that I've seen. And, you know, the main guy that most people say when they realize that is Kubrick. But I think maybe for me, I got into Peckinpah first. I saw Peckinpah movies first. And so I think it was Peckinpah was the first filmmaker whose films I watched. And I started to notice there are things in this guy's movies that aren't in any other guy's movies, which means he's doing these things on purpose. And there is someone behind the lens doing this shit on purpose. You know, and you got my old man next to me going, you see the slow motion thing? He's the only one that does it like this. And, you know, shit like that. And so, you know, wisely, he did not show me Bring Me the Head of Alfredo Garcia when I was 12.
Yeah.
But later on,
that's a different view. That's a different kind of view.
He knew when to stop. That said, a couple of years later, I'm going to date and age myself here. I got my first job working at a drive-in theater as a projectionist / the same guy that owned that owned a mom and pop VHS video store.
Amazing.
And basically all through high school, I put myself through my own self-curated film school, where if anyone who's out there that's old enough to remember working at a video store knows, you basically just start grabbing movies off the shelf and killing time by watching them all. And one of the first things I did was start picking up Peckinpah movies that I hadn't yet seen, which includes stuff like Straw Dogs and Killer Elite, which hey, it's got Jimmy Caan. That's enough.
It does have Jimmy Caan.
And then there was this one movie. It was just this title. It was strange. Bring Me the Head of Alfredo Garcia. And I watched it one night. I was like 16 or 17. And it's the kind of movie where you remember that scene at the end of The Shawshank Redemption where Morgan Freeman as Red gets out of prison finally, right? And he's not sure he's going to do with his life yet. And he goes to the wall. He goes to the stone fence wall that Andy Dufresne tells him to check out if he ever gets out. And there's a stone there that Andy's left for him. And, you know, he takes it out and he opens it and he sees that there's all this stuff inside. There's this hidden case behind the stone, and there's money inside and a message and all this. And I love this little human beat where Morgan Freeman stops and he drops the box and he looks around to see if anyone's watching him, as if, is this a goof? Is this a bit? Are we doing a bit? Is someone like he's discovered something that feels so secret and so unique and so special and so knowingly life-changing that he has to look around, like, even though it's a couple decades early, he's got to look around to see if this is like candid, a hidden camera show or something like that. This can't be real. And that's what I felt like watching Bring Me the Head of Alfredo Garcia, where I had to pause the thing like 13 fucking different times and like look around going, whoa, what? You know, brief bit of house cleaning here for anyone who's listening and has yet to watch the film. I will not spoil it for you, but I will give the very basic bare bones of plot, which is essentially it is set in Mexico, where a Mr. Big type character, a crime lord by the name of El Jefe, and he's not like a Michael Mann crime lord, you know, doesn't seem like he's involved in like offshore narco trafficking shit like that. He's very much more almost like a character like out of The Godfather, where it's set in Mexico City. Very old world, and he's played with this kind of menacing relish by Emilio Fernandez, who also played the heavy in The Wild Bunch. And anyway, he finds out that his teenage daughter is pregnant, and he wants to know, who's the son of a bitch that got my daughter pregnant? It turns out it's this local cad by the name of Alfredo Garcia. And so he puts out a hit. He just puts it's where the film gets a title. But he puts out a hit in Alfredo Garcia. Anyone brings me this man's head, they get $1 million. No questions asked. Just do it. Now, counter to that plot, we have the story of Benny, played by the greatest actor who ever lived, in my opinion, Warren Oates. And Warren Oates plays a down and out loser. He runs a really shitty bar in outside of Mexico City that traffics in cheap mezcal and women. And he sits there all night, every night, playing shitty songs on the piano. His life is a dead end. It's not going anywhere. And all of a sudden, he hears about this call. This Bring Me the Head of Alfredo Garcia. And he knows the one thing. He's got something special. He's got two things that are special, but he only realizes one of them is special. And that is that he's got a bit of information that the heavies don't. He knows that Alfredo Garcia is actually already dead. He died in a car accident. And he knows this because his girlfriend is cheating on him, or was cheating on him, with Al Garcia. And knowing that, he sees this as his opportunity, that if he can dig up the grave of Alfredo Garcia, cut off his head, bring it to the money men, well, by God, that'll change his life. Even though the money men lie to him and tell him that the reward is only $10,000, which I think has both shows you what a loser they view Benny as. But it's also interesting, that's the exact same amount that the Wild Bunch are living and dying for in the Wild Bunch. You know, it's the same amount of money that, as in the Wild Bunch, they say this cuts a lot of family ties. He's going to risk everything. He's going to risk his life, his love, everything, to find this body, cut off its head, and bring it to El Jefe, much to his girlfriend Elita's disgust, played by the absolutely amazing Azalea Vega. And that's it. That's enough. Long-winded.
If that's not enough.
Head of Alfredo Garcia.
I don't know what is.
But what makes it special? I mean, it's already, as a genre film, that's incredible. I mean, and that's what originally what the film was meant to be. It was meant to just be just a very kind of down and dirty Roger Corman-esque road film. And I don't mean that as a pejorative. I love Roger Corman, but that's what it was meant to be. And instead, Peckinpah took it and he's tinkered with it over the course of 3 or 4 years while making all of these other masterpieces like The Wild Bunch, like The Ballad of Cable Hog, like Straw Dogs, like Pat Garrett and Billy the Kid. And, you know, as Peckinpah's life was going on and his alcoholism and cocaine addictions were waxing and waning, his relationships and marriages were falling apart, and you know, the only thing that he seemed to be getting right were the films. The idea, the script that he had with him for Alfredo Garcia, it became like this, you know, I note it in my essay. I've written an essay on this both for Brightwall Dark Room and then the video essay for Imprint. I note that the film becomes like this vestigial sack collecting all of the pus that is accumulating from Peckinpah's extraordinary insecurity and toxicity and rage and self-loathing over those years. It's almost, you could almost, I mean, if you want to get real pretentious, and you know I love getting real pretentious, you could almost argue that Bring Me the Head of Alfredo Garcia becomes like his own personal portrait of Dorian Gray.
Yeah,
where he continues to make these masterpiece level films, these brilliant auteurist visions about codes of masculinity and his tributes to them, but also his very kind of fraught and increasingly worried interrogations of those codes. That as he's doing that, this story of Benny becomes increasingly autobiographical and increasingly ugly and increasingly surreal and increasingly hard to fucking believe anyone would put this shit on a screen. And it is ultimately, in my opinion, he made movies after this, some of which are pretty entertaining and lovely. Like, I joke about Killer Elite. It's not his greatest movie, but then he also made movies after this, like Cross of Iron, which I think is wonderful.
Osterman. Osterman was after this, right? Well, the imprint, the imprint director's like version, like his assembly, is actually a terrific movie. That's a terrific movie. I'm going to
out myself. I have not seen that cut of the movie. So I will refrain. But then I'll say, you know, there's stuff. And I do want to pick that up. Hey, Imprint, hit me up. I do want to pick that up. But also, he did Convoy, which is like a great pop movie.
Mm-hmm.
It's not, you know, a work of art. But this is Alfredo Garcia, 1974's Alfredo Garcia. This is his last masterpiece. This is... And part of what makes it a masterpiece, I think, one of the many parts that makes it a masterpiece, is that the corrosion of that portrait of Dorian Gray that was getting increasingly humorous and metastasizing, you know, in his attic, you know, the script for this movie is it was getting uglier and uglier. It was getting uglier and uglier because his life was increasingly becoming more and more unstable. And you can feel that in this film. This is a film made by a man who is falling apart, and you feel it in the movie.
We'll be right back after this quick break.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
It's one of the most beautiful parts of your essay, especially when you talk about some of the improvisation and his unexpected kind of rug pulling that he does to Warren Oates. Even before that,
I just note that his like his artistic transmission, like that of Benny's Chevy, it's starting to slip out of gear. That's actually what makes the film so fraught and engaging and kind of hallucinatory and hypnotic, is you're like, you can feel him losing control.
Yeah.
He never entirely does, but there are so many sequences where it's like, he is like one bad cut away from blowing this whole fucking thing. And he never does. But that, much like watching Benny fuck his own life up, you keep watching this movie going, oh my God, Peckinpah's one cut away. He's one bad angle away. He's one misdirected performance away from fucking flushing this down the toilet. And he never does. But that high wire act of Sam Peckinpah, who at that point was an artist who was, you know, he's the equivalent of, you know, Keith Richards at that point in the 70s. You know, he's a guy on death's door, but he's doing some of the greatest work of his entire career. You know, I think it was it Lester Bangs, the great critic Lester Bangs, who wrote that, who said that, like Bob Dylan, Keith Richards is someone who looks and creates at their absolute best when they are right there at the jaws of death. And Peckinpah is one of those guys where I truly believe this is his best work. And he was part of what makes it his best work is he was so goddamn fucking out of his mind that he was willing to go anywhere with that artwork. And including risking making himself look like an absolute fucking buffoon, which he does. He purposely makes himself look like a buffoon as a man, and almost risks making himself a buffoon as an artist, but doesn't. And that, man, I know I'm going long here, as I tend to do, but boy, oh boy, it just makes this movie infused with this like razor wired electricity that you don't see. And I know that's like a hacky thing to say, well, you don't see this in movies anymore, but you really don't. You don't see that.
They don't leave people as wild as Sam Peckinpah to their own devices in 2023.
And this is a movie, first and last time, where he got the studio just to be like, dude, if you'll do it for this amount of money, we'll leave you the fuck alone. Just go do your thing. And that was very important to him because he had just come off making Pat Garrett and Billy the Kid, which great movie, beautiful movie. Hey, if you're not crying like I do, when Slim Pickens takes one to the gut, and Bob Dylan starts singing Knocking on Heaven's Door, and he looks at his wife and but that said, the studio really fucked with him on that movie and they took it from him. And I'm gonna change the subject really quickly because I'll start really leaning into those venal evil cocksuckers that ruined his vision and tarnished his vision, didn't ruin it, but tarnished it. And he was real hot to trot to make a movie that was his movie. And he even said after the fact, you know, right or wrong, love it or hate it, Alfredo Garcia was my movie. That was the one that I got to make the way exactly. I wanted to make it, which means it is his purest vision. Even if he wasn't his purest Sam, you know, as I said, he was slipping at that point. But that just makes it all the more honest. And what is it being honest about? It's a movie about Sam Peckinpah's terrors. It's about his fears as a man and his fears as a romantic partner. It's his fears as an artist. You know, there's a great scene where Benny has to go in and talk to the money men and convince them to give him an advance to go get the head of Alfredo Garcia. And he doesn't tell him he already has it, but he's going to try and trick them into giving him an advance. And it's this humiliating moment. And you realize, my God, this is Sam Peckinpah walking into a room of executives begging for the money to make this movie. And then there's so many other scenes where, boy, oh boy.
And when and in true Sam style, when he goes in the room with the executives, it just ends in gunfire and death. It's just it becomes a fantasy of, like, backstabbery and, like, literally trying to claw your way out of these spaces just with whatever dignity and life that you can take and scratch out of that room.
Yeah, I mean, it was literally a guy in his boxer shorts while wearing a business jacket, tie, you know, collar,
it's a look.
Shirt, getting a pedicure. You know, they're just kind of sitting there with the lazy contentment of cats that have already eaten the mice. And, but overall, I think, you know, if you're someone who is aware at all of Sam Peckinpah's reputation, you know that he has a very troubling relationship with women, both vis-a-vis his personal life as well as his art. You know, he said some pretty awful things in interviews. It's hard to always, it's never, you're never quite sure when he's putting you on, like he's leaning into the reputation of Sam Peckinpah. Or when he's like, oh yeah, no, I actually believe this horrid shit. You know, there's,
yes,
very famously, there's the film Straw Dogs, which I believe is a critique of toxic masculinity in the form of Dustin Hoffman's character. But there is a scene where his wife in that film is an ex-lover of hers kind of forces himself, not kind of, does force himself upon her. And in that scene, you know, she very clearly says stop, and then there's this moment where she starts to lean into it and very vaguely seems to give consent, very ambiguously. And then her ex-lover's friend walks into the room and he forcibly joins in, and they rape her, and it's horrible and it's queasy and it's just very difficult to watch. And you watch that movie and you're like, you feel like you assume that the movie is on your side and going, well, Jesus Christ, this is horrid. This is, yeah. But then, you know, in a Playboy interview that same year, he's like, well, you know, she asked for it. She asked for the rape. It was just a little bit more than she bargained for. And you what? You hear something like that and you're like, well, Jesus Christ, buddy, I can't.
I don't know if, yeah, it's like, I don't
take you off my list, man. I can't roll with that.
Yeah. I don't know if, the blistering critique and the ambivalence and ambiguity of a performance registered for me as she had it coming or she was asking for it in that movie. Although it has some very treacherous, it's treading, as you said before, like treading treacherous ground, you know, it's, and yeah, for him to have that take, it's like, oh, that's a really gross take, Sam. I don't know what's going on with you.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. What's incredible about Alfredo Garcia, and what I kind of make the centerpiece of my essay, is that there's a scene in Alfredo Garcia that gets a lot of talk, and it's included. I will admit I have yet to listen to Mike's audio commentary, but I have heard the other three, which are full of Peckinpah scholars and biographers. And there's this scene in which Benny and his gal Alita, they're on the road. They're going to get the head of Alfredo Garcia. They are basically they're assaulted, and one of the two assailants takes Alita aside to rape her. And instead of that happening, she manages to, through almost sheer force of will, render him impotent, and is able to convince him not to do it, the would-be rapist. And instead, he just
the would-be rapist played by Chris Christopherson, no less.
Chris Christopherson. And in what is considered to be, a lot of people and have written about this scene as the moment where Peckinpah loses the movie. As I keep saying, when's he going to lose it? A lot of people talk about this, like, this movie, this makes no sense, where he just kind of gets sullen and collapses and starts to pout. And then Alita comes to him and comforts him and gives him a kiss. And Benny walks in on this and kills the man. And he walks in on this and he kills the man, and he's upset because, from Benny's point of view, he's believing the absolute worst of rape myths as Peckinpah was espousing in that Playboy interview, which is, oh my God, she wanted this man. She wanted this more virile man. And instead, that's actually not what happens. I think what's so amazing about this film is Peckinpah crucifying himself. And in a very self-aware way, he is nailing to the post his own bullshit opinions about women, because the way the sequence is framed, and truly confounds me that more people don't agree with me on this. Of course, it confounds me that more people don't agree with me on everything. But, to me, that
how dare they?
Been,
how dare I'm, they?
I mean, I promise you, they've been thinking about this more than I have. to me, that sequence.
You know, sorry, I just have to interrupt. You said a paragraph. Mm-hmm. A paragraph as a title is the Travis Woods story. I think I'm gonna have to have. I promise you, no one's been thinking about it as much as I have. It's maybe
that's true.
That's true of both of us. I'm just like, I promise you, no one has been thinking as much of this as I have.
And so, essentially, what happens is Alita is able to disarm this man through sheer force of will, and then because she still knows that they're in danger, she gives him a kiss to like assuage his ego, which she has shattered, and render him harmless. First, Benny runs in on this and he sees her kissing him, and he's like, "Oh my!" You know, he immediately just loses his mind. That to me, that sequence is this film in microcosm. That is which is Peckinpah saying, no, I get it. Like, this woman is forced to, that these men are like animals, that they're these fragile, raging apes, and that she is having to cajole, manipulate, assuage, massage, calm, do all of these things just to keep this man from murdering her and her boyfriend. And she is forced to do that. But of course, Benny runs in on that and sees that and totally misconstrues that as, oh my God, I knew it. All women are whores. And they want it from whoever is the alpha in the room. They gotta have it from them. And I'm not an alpha, and this guy is. And this is exactly why I gotta put myself through the hell of getting the head of Alfredo Garcia. If I have money, I'll be able to buy a better life, not have to worry about this. This is all Peckinpah buckshotting his terrors and his self and his feelings of horror and fear about the power women have who hurt him. It's him just buckshotting that shit across the screen. And the only person who looks bad in that entire sequence, it's not Alita. It's not even the would-be rapist. It's fucking Benny, our ostensible hero, which, because Benny was designed to look, talk, and act like Sam Peckinpah, if Benny's the one that looks like the asshole, that looks like the fool in terms of his opinions about women and his attitudes about women and sex and assault and all of these things, if Benny looks like, sounds like, talks like, acts like Sam Peckinpah, and he's the asshole, that's Sam Peckinpah saying, no, I'm the asshole, I'm the monster, I'm the problem. And that, I mean, My God, I'm just throwing shit out. I know that. I'm just throwing ideas out here. But that to me, whether I'm watching that for the first time as a 16-year-old kid in a video store, horrifying the customers. Because I'm playing this at like, you know, 7 p.m. on a Tuesday. fuck it, you know. They paid me minimum wage. I'm not gonna play, you know, a Disney movie. And so whether I'm 16 watching this, where I'm watching this now, that I find that hallucinatory cascade of imagery that the film carries, along with the weight of its vision and its excoriation of the artist who made it by the artist who made it, that the idea that it is this, like I said, this portrait of Dorian Gray for one of our most visionary and brilliant and yet troubled and troubling artists. Fuck, man. There's a reason this box set is a box set and it's a doorstop, because while the movie speaks for itself and speaks plainly and speaks well, and that's really all you need, a lot of people can say a lot of fucking things about it and should, because it is a film that you just don't, I'll say it again, and I know this tacky thing to say, they don't make them like this anymore with this. No. It's the rare work of art. I'll say that, then I'll finally put myself on some oxygen so you can speak. But it is very rare, I think. It is very rare that anymore we come upon works of art that feel dangerous.
Yeah.
The kind of work of art that makes you put it down and look around the room to see if this is a bit, see if this is a trick, because you can't believe what this work of art is engaging with. And you can't believe what this work of art is making you think about and making you think about yourself. It's dangerous in a way we don't really allow our art or our artists to be anymore. And that's a miracle. That's a fucking miracle. It's an ugly miracle, this film. It's an ugly one. And it's got bits of fun, but it's rough. It's a fucking miracle because it's dangerous. It's dangerous and it's out of control, made by someone who is dangerous and out of control. And we don't get that a lot anymore. And I think that's pretty goddamn special.
It's incredibly special. I'm trying to think of any substitutes for those kind of feelings. And maybe the last time that I felt I was watching dangerous stuff personally is like the Gregoraki movies in the 90s. Like that felt, yeah, has some danger to it. You know, it's like, what am I watching here? It's like, it's in a different way, but yeah, this is, I don't think there's much more to say in this podcast that I don't want people, that is not going to make people want to go and grab this disc, because your thoughts on it and this movie, the way that it speaks for itself, and just the absolute buffet of amazing examination of this thing, it's so incredibly special, man. So look, thank you,
so it's a buffet. You're right. It's a goddamn buffet. A buffet of toxic masculinity, but a fucking buffet.
Look, I didn't say you were going to feel good after eating too much at the buffet. I just said that you've got a lot to eat. And so thank you so much for coming and chatting to me about this movie. I know how much you love it, and I know you've loved it for many years. So again, it's one of those little things that I, when my friends get their wins and get to talk about these things, and it gets to be shared in such a beautiful package like this and becomes, you know, part of the art that they celebrate. I love it. So thank you so much for doing it. Thank you so much for doing this show again to talk to me about it. And thank you for all your beautiful unpacking and examination. So folks, go to imprintfilms.com. You can go and check that all out there. You can find it, just Google it and just write in Alfredo Garcia imprint. You'll find it. They ship internationally. I think they're available on Amazon internationally as well. If you can't buy direct, all region free, all around the world, and you'll hear this great man and watch his great video essay that is all about it. And then just watch the shit out of this beautiful 4K scan from the original theatrical, you know, the original 35mm negative that is this movie. It looks amazing.
Well, I'll just say one thing. Watch the movie first. Spoilers ahoy. Yeah. in my essay. Watch that fucking movie. And to say one other thing, watch War Notes movies. Yeah. Obviously, this movie is going to send you, I'm sure anyone watching this has seen a Peckinpah movie or two or three or four or five. Watch all of them. And thankfully, fuck, Imprint is just rolling those things out left and right. A lot of amazing Peckinpah movies they've gotten the rights to and released that are in the packaging is gorgeous on all of them. Again, get an imprint, hit me up, send me some of those. but also watch Warren Oates movies. Watch more Warren Oates movies. Warren Oates, greatest actor who ever lived. My favorite actor, and doing levels and layers of work in this film that we will not see the likes of which again. And I got to just shout out to my main man, Warren.
And go right now in your pod feeds and search for Watch with Jen, which is Jen Johans, who's a friend of all of our shows and a great friend of ours. Travis goes deep and long on all things Warren Oates on her terrific show, Watch with Jen. So go over there, listen to that. It's a spectacular episode that talks specifically Warren Oates, which is why I didn't make Travis tread the same ground that he's recently done, espousing his love for Warren Oates. So go and check that out and do that. And that is definitely something that is going to be worth your time. But man, you're the best. Thank you so much. Is there anything coming up that you want to shout out other than or maybe hint at and tease at or anything like that?
Oh, Jesus, I don't remember anymore. You can find me at a heart of gould on Twitter. You can find my writing at rightwalldarkroom.com. You could find me and Blake chitting and chatting, talking up Inherent Vice, the great film Inherent Vice, on our podcast Increment Vice. And as for what's coming up, my brain is on fire and been consumed by the fact that I made the foolhardy decision to write the greatest and the horniest book on the films and vision of director Brian De Palma. And that has kind of consumed my summer, and it's going to consume my whole next year. I promise, if you see any weird, like, softcore porn or wee type movies in the Letterboxd, it is all for research. It's all for the book.
What was your excuse before that, my friend? What was your excuse before writing this book? It's your personality. We love it. You're a scholar.
It was a rough pandemic for everybody, buddy. And we got through it the way we got through it.
No judgment, man. And I'm right here with you.
But yeah, mainly I'm working on a project called De Palma Does Hollywood, which is just a very, very strange, very, very strange look back at the films and vision of who I think is the greatest living American director of all time, and that is Brian De Palma.
I think if anyone else had said to me they were going to write the greatest Brian De Palma book and horniest, the horniest speaks for itself, but I think the greatest Brian De Palma book, I would think that they would be treading on that line of either making their masterpiece or looking like a buffoon. And my friend, I can definitely say to everyone who's listening, you are on the masterpiece line. I cannot wait. You're on the masterpiece side of that line.
We're going to call it a masterpiece of buffoonery.
Yeah. I cannot wait. I'm so excited and thrilled. If you have read Travis's previous writings, especially the Blowout essay, which I think is, you know, maybe top 10 essays on any film ever, you will be as excited and voracious. And when you see Travis talking about Brian De Palma, you'll definitely see our extended community of great people engaging with him, because we just are all basically lining up outside the theater waiting with months to go. We're like those creepy Star Wars fans waiting and just going, when is this next movie coming out? You know, lining up a year before it comes out. I'm aching to get even a little snippet of that to read. So man, I can't wait. So thank you so much.
Thank you. It'll be done. It'll be done soon enough. And it'll be
No. You don't rush. Don't rush. Don't rush perfection. Oh, you just like, do it.
Anyone who knows me knows I do not rush. I do not rush on just about anything. It'll be a hot minute, but it is coming, and it is weird. I'll probably be on a few watch lists once it comes out.
That John Doe watch list from 7, you're not going to be on that one. You're going to be on a much cooler watch list.
No. Just like a Jesus dude. Calm down.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.